would you agree with me when I tell, when I say my observation, an observation that I make, a very small thing, but based upon a lot of jungle loafing, would you agree with me if I tell you that to a village boy, right up to date, the status symbol for him was not only a shirt, but also a handsome belt? Would you agree with me if I say that the status symbol to the village girl is not only a sari, a colored sari, but shoes and a bag? Now I would say 1948 to 56 compared to 1940 to 48. Village boys, more village boys have I seen and actually noted and remarked on it and drew the attention of people like Mr. Arthur Mulvery and so on. More village boys equipped with the fabulous shirt and either the broad or the narrow belt, which they prize and store. They bring it out on the traditional on traditional occasions, the weddings and New Year and Vesak, and for their trip to the village. Far more between 48 to 56 than from 40 to 48. 48 to 56, far more girls have acquired the sari, not the shoe, not the handbag.
Yes.
So what I'm saying is, if that is an indication of percolation to the village, then, today, for example, today, the village boy's dream will be to have a bicycle, as much as his own father would also dearly love the bicycle. Now, when you talk of percolation to the village, in the Jaffna Peninsula, there was right through British days, there was a far greater percentage of boys and girls with the clothes and the accessories, the belt and the bicycle. And the bicycle equipped with either a dynamo lamp or a carbide lamp, than in the Sinhalese districts. Now, would you conclude from that there was benefit, that there was a greater percolation and benefit thereby to the Jaffa Tamil boy and girl in their remote villages than in the case of Sinhalese? No. I would say that the system of distribution was such, the personal endeavor, the storing of money and the purchase of the goods. Now, after all, from the war 1940 and from 48 to 56, whatever consumer goods came, the goods were available all over the island from Mathura to Point Pirie. But in the Jaffna districts, there was a greater urge to work and save in order to buy, first of all, the shirt and the belt, then the bicycle, then the Austin car. Then there was, in the South, not the non-availability of the goods.
Mm-hmm. But correspondingly now, speaking of Sinhalese districts, I would say that in the last 10 years, there's far more use of consumer goods, you know. They don't have malays anymore, very seldom. And slippers, status symbols again coming in.
But I'll go much further in this little village of Polpitigama. The little boutiques there have got cosmetics, face creams, face powders, lavenders, lipstick, women's sanitary wear, sanitary articles. And I've often, and I've always stopped and asked, what is the class that buys? And they say it is the cultivators, daughters and sons. In fact, Yardley's lavender, which I couldn't get in Colombo, I have bought in Polpitigama because it is there. Now that you take the Melbourne biscuit, I don't think the peak cream peak creams and Huntley and Palmer's. It was the status symbol of afternoon hospitality in Ceylon with the English educated classes and the salaried classes, that never got down to the villager up to 1939, but I think progressively it did from 48-56. Today the Malibu biscuits and the Williams biscuits, which have got a high class finish about them, you find all the little boutiques are stocked with them, and you find a regular turnover, and you find in the humblest of cultivator homes those biscuits with their elaborate wrappings and handsome appearance, they are being bought and used.
What conclusions does this lead to?
I say that in the first instance the village taste was not there, in the sense that in 1939 on a jungle trip, if I offered Pete Frame's biscuits, I would have shocked the villager because he wouldn't know what to do with it. He was far more elementary. Time passed and his own tastes have changed. There is a desire now, his palate has become a little more fastidious.
Doesn't that mean that he is becoming more achievement oriented, in the sense that he has to save the money to buy these things?
Undoubtedly, which I say was a characteristic feature of the Tamils of the Jaffna Peninsula, with the missionary education, and they had models available. The missionary and his wife, who ultimately produced the school teaching class, and therefore you found generations of children, hundreds and hundreds of children looking at the missionary teacher, the missionary doctor, people with whom they were in close contact, as their models for tastes, for habits, for dress, etc. And then there was the urge to earn and save in order to achieve what they all thought was a better life. But in the similar districts, I say that there was greater fastidiousness in Matra and Gaul than in Hambantota, Kurunagala and Kolpidigal. Today, I say that the village taste has changed tremendously. In fact, in this village of Kolpidigal, I have had two men come and ask me, villagers, men in their 60s, who have solemnly asked my advice as to whether they ought to cut their kundes. Because they say their sons and daughters, particularly daughters, who are schooling, grown-up daughters, who have schooled and who are now, who have schooled somewhere near Kurunagala and who have come home, have suggested to their fathers that the fathers are out of date and somewhat ludicrous by wearing long hair, whereas the smart people they have seen on the outskirts of Kurunagala have cut their hair. And the fathers, in their desire to please their daughters and not to appear antiquated or outdated in the eyes of their daughters, are debating the cutting of their hair, because I'm pretty certain they feel, and their own conservatism stands against their sharing their hair. They feel that they are making an unwarranted alteration to themselves by cutting their hair, but they feel that they must also give in to the requirements of the daughter, of the educated daughter who's come back to the village, who feels that the father is a bit of a clown for having a knot of hair. I say, for example, it's a very small illustration, but it goes to show how tastes and ideas are dictated.
Mm-hmm. Then going further on in politics and taking the Bandaranaike MEP performance, I'm particularly interested in the Satyagraha campaign on Gaul face, which failed, I think, and the Bandaranaike Chevanagam Pact and its revocation, and then finally, of course, the riots. I was wondering what comments you had to make, particularly with regard to the riots.
Yes, you know, the Satyagraha on Gaul face you're talking about 1956.
Yes.
Not in 1958.
Yes, sorry, yes.
And Satyagraha and Goldfish was not a concerted movement. It was a kind of exhibitionism on the part of a few people. Mr. Sundaralingam was the man who started by going and sitting down on Goldfish. He publicized the fact and he sat down on Goldfish Green. Then certain Tamil leaders who were against this kind of stunt themselves felt obliged to do it in case they lose caste. I'm aware of an instance of a well-known of a man who claims to be an accredited Tamil leader who was dead against it. But he was told, if you don't do it, you will not be able to explain yourself. So he went and sat down. But if you cast your mind back, only a handful of men sat down there. It wasn't a mass movement. It was a stunt on the part of a few. Well, that was 56. 1958 and the communal disturbances, I have pondered a great deal over that. Now, this much, here are a few things I can tell you. Just at that time, there was a terrific strike, not strike, a big one. There was a terrific labor, industrial dispute, which was up for hearing. I was appearing for the Employers' Federation. Shanmugadasan of the Communist Party had raised the big demand of government rate of DNS allowance and a freebie for the industrial workers. The case was argued at great length before a court, the president of which was Mr. G.C. Krossathambaya. He's a very old gentleman now, he's a highly respected district judge, and he was very, of course, delighted to it. He held against the union. Immediately held against the union, Shanmugadasan called a strike in defiance of the order, the first time that had happened. When the strike was on, a few days, the communal disturbances broke out. Then the strike was called off. Now, I'm taking this entirely out of its context. Now, Mr. Krossathambaya was greatly distressed by the communal disturbances. And he believed that the order, that the judgment he gave against this union triggered off the communal disturbances, the rioting of 1958. He has told me so himself, and has confessed to a great sense of guilt. Now, I think he's dead wrong. He's dead wrong. He will go to his grave firmly convinced that the judgment he gave triggered this off. I think he's dead wrong. The commander of the army at that time was Brigadier Anton Muthukumaru. Head of the Navy was Commodore Roy Stimmer. I know this for certain, that when the news of this rioting started in Colombo, these service commanders felt, they knew or felt, that this is likely to take a, it's likely to spread unless it is quashed immediately. They were willing to do it. They wanted to do it. They went to Mr. Bandar and told him, hand it to us. Within 3 hours we'll stop it. He said no, and information had kept coming to him that the thing had started somewhere in Cartagena and was likely to spread. He deliberately withheld the entry of the services, much to the dismay and disgust of those service commanders. On the morning of the day on which he proclaimed there, or proclaimed or brought into force the Public Security Act. A delegation of people went to see him, headed by Sarvanashram Mahadeva. And Sarvanashram Mahadeva begged him and said, declare a state of emergency. Send the troops out. You can stop this. He laughed sadistically and said, over a trifle like this, do you want the gentleman want me to declare a state of emergency? He declined, refused. Although information was coming that that thing was spreading. Now, later in the day, by about 10:30, 11, there was an attempt to set the Chalmers granaries on fire. That was the time that he gave in to the urgent advice that Sir Oliver had been giving him right through. Declare a state of emergency, use the services, you can fill it. Mm-hmm. Wait. Now, at that time, there was very current a story, a tale, that very clever, insidious propaganda had been utilized, had been set loose, to fan flames of passion. That
Singhalese passion.
Yeah, Singhalese passion. A story that a Singhalese woman's breast had been cut, and that was cleverly put out, and it ran the length of the of the country. That rumor mongering, designed and deliberate, brought this about. In fact, there was only one case arising out of 1958. There was only one case. There was one case of a woman who was charged with rumor mongering. She was charged somewhere about 1959, and she was convicted. Americans, British journalists who flew out to Ceylon at that time believed this, because many of them came to see me and to ask, well, what is your view? Was there very clever Russian propaganda, not Chinese in those days, was there very clever, insidious Russian propaganda, cleverly set afoot, which fanned the flames of passion? Now, what has, as I said, what has sorely puzzled me is what actually triggered this off. That rioting started in somewhere in Kotahena, Kochikade, is what I believe from what I have heard from these service commanders and so on, that is how it started. I can offer no explanation as to whether it was just baseless rumor, or whether it was a local disturbance, but by that time the many parts of the island were receptive to the idea of hate and vengeance against the Tamil. How this started, I cannot offer an explanation. But when it did start, the information to the police and to the services was, it is likely to spread, and was rapidly going to spread.
Are you sure the police had that information?
No. I cannot talk of the service commanders. I can't talk of the police.
You know why?
But it spread very fast.
My own view is that, one thing, I don't know why these journalists thought it was Russian propaganda. I'm skeptical of that. But I am inclined to view that there was deliberate and designed rumor mongering by Singhalese communalists. But the more important question is the extent of planning that went to it. That, I think, there's a big question mark. You see, and by planning, I don't mean necessarily central planning, but on a local scale of sorts, you see, people in certain areas taking it upon themselves. And in fact, I think certain ministers have to be treated as suspects, certainly in the Polnaro area. But all that is very obscure subject. With reference to this...
But you know, Thakur Vithatchi is Emergency 58, and in his Emergency 58, he does sketch out something of the way in which it developed. But he is not able to explain, he doesn't explain how this arose. As to why it arose, could be said. Passions were aflame, the ground was receptive.
Yes, I think that
but
point...
But where it arose and how it arose, whether it arose in Kotahena and spread, whether it arose in Panagra with the burning of that of a Hindu priest and spread, whether it arose in Polannaruwa and then spread, is something that he doesn't explain. But all I know is that within 3 days, it took 3 days for the thing to spread around the island. And the service commanders asked for permission to squash it immediately. It was not granted. I mean, I've often wondered whether what really happened was that Mr. Bandaranaike wanted the Tamils to get a small meeting up to a point. But this much I am positive about. When he discovered, when it is proved to him, there was a concerted effort, now far removed from the Tamil-Sinhalese conflict, to set Chinese Tamils alight at 11 o'clock was the time that he decided to.
I was under the impression that Gundevia paid a little visit and that also had a salutary effect.
In 1958. It certainly rings a bell now. But I can't.
What about the role of the Radio Ceylon broadcast? Lulamite mentioned...
One moment there. Yes, I beg your pardon. There's one thing which comes back immediately. Yes. It has been suggested by many that the ill-timed announcement of the shooting of the mayor of Muralia in Batticolo, that the ill-timed announcement with the words which were provocative in the sense that it suggested that Batticolo Tamils lay in wait and murdered this man, as a kind of anti-Sinhalese vengeance act. It has been suggested by many that was the triggering off point. But I can recall these service commanders saying that the information to them was that something took place in Kotahena and something was taking place around the island, but the time was opportune for it to be snuffed out immediately. But Mr. Bandaranaike refused.
To what extent did the Sinhalese in Tamil districts suffer? I know it was a bit afterwards.
What do you mean, in Tamil districts, in what sense?
In Jaffna and Northern Province, as a reaction, wasn't there some trouble?
Oh yes, there were reprisals as such. Nagadeepa, for example.
I was under the impression myself, because I had a friend over there and I spoke to him later, that the government radio blew those up too. That was later on, but they did blow them, exaggerate them.
No, but this much I can tell you. I know this personally, having heard it from Mr. Panamlu, right at that time, when news of the Tamil attack on Nagadeepa came, Sir Oliver told him that by the time Sir Oliver had taken control, that by the severest of measures, he was going to suppress that information. Because if it went out, then there might have been no stopping what was going to take place. That was not announced for... I don't think it was ever officially announced. Likewise, he had clamped down, refused to divulge that how it first started in Nagadeepa was that Sinhalese had set fire to the Ther, THER, that is the huge cart in which the image of a god is taken for traditional, taken out on traditional ceremonial exposition. Now that chair which was destroyed, it's now been rebuilt. That chair which was destroyed, I mean the wheels, that giant wheel, I think they're about 40 feet in diameter.
Where were they?
In Nagadeepa. In Nagadeepa Island, you have a Hindu temple and you have the Buddhist temple, within about 250 yards of each other. This chair was believed to be 800 to 1,000 years old, that is the cart. Because it was a giant performance, the yoke was enough. But that was burnt.
By
Sinhalese.
There were lots of Sinhalese.
Yes, in fact, I know the trustee, or one of the trustees of the temple, this was burnt. Damaged, not merely damaged, but burnt down. Then, of course, the reprisal was attack on other people. Then it took almost all the 7 years. Last year was the first time.
End of interview.